Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai I'm not gonna come on not by myself Om Shri I'm not entertaining you Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Shri I'm waiting for you people in the back Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Om Shri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram I want to spend the little time we have on the mysticism of breath, especially how it works in everyday life and how it works in meditation. And I enjoyed sharing ideas with you this weekend, and mostly we've talked about the pillar of attitude, of how to view life and make friends with life, and we haven't done a lot of practice. But don't get confused that the extraordinary value of going to the gym, you know, the spiritual gym. And anybody who has the devotion that I see in you and in each of you would be foolish if you didn't create a daily gym, a daily spiritual practice. If you have a guide and they can help you, very good. But if they don't, just be an alchemist, put something together. So, at the center of our lineage stream training, our pedagogy, the vehicle we drive to get to limitless freedom is the mysticism of breath. I want to give you just a few things, examples from Hazrat Inayat Khan, because you can hear it from me, but when you hear it from him, it might get in there a little deeper. When he first came to the West, it was 1910, at the end of the year. A few months later, he gave a concert in San Francisco, and there was a woman there named Ada Martin, a young Jewish mystic. And when she met and heard Inayat Khan, she went into a very, very deep state. And then a few days later, when she tried to get in touch with him, he had already gone to Santa Barbara, but she wrote to him and said how this vision she'd had, and she wanted to study with him. And he said, "You meet me up in Seattle, and I'll initiate you." So his first disciple in the Western world was an American Jewish woman. And his, what do you say, gender blindness, if you want to say it that way, continued, because before his death, he had only four advanced marids, four murshidas, all women. None of the men marids at that time had advanced. to their stage, according to his evaluation. She became Ada, became Rabia Martin. Then, by according to his own words, she became his most advanced disciple, and he made her a Murshida, Murshida Rabia Martin. And you know, in 1911, he hardly knew anything about the Western psychology, Western temperament, and not only that, but he didn't have the what would be natural to be in the same village as your student. So, you know, you could teach someone one-on-one in person, and mostly he trained her through mail. And very luckily, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I don't remember when, maybe 2004, 10 years ago, Pierre Zia was doing his dissertation on the life of Anayat Khan, of his grandfather, and through that, he convinced another group called Sufism Reoriented to let us all have copies of these letters from Anayat to Rabia, right? So this group, Sufism Reoriented, had inherited Rabia Martin's archive, and that's why they had the letters that she received from Hazrat Anayat Khan. Some 85, 86 letters. I'm sure there are more than those. I mean, there were more letters. I don't mean we have them. But we received all of those, all in his handwriting. And we took a lot of time to transcribe them because, you know, I remember having two magnifying glasses. Is that, what is that letter? And then, you know, I was able to also have a better chance at it because I know some Urdu, and so I know the, you know, syntax of someone writing who speaks Urdu, you know, rather than, you know, straight English. Anyway, we transcribed, those are all up online for you. You can download them from murshidsam.org. But I want to read to you a few letters. This one, so he initiates her, I think it was April, May or June, I don't remember, of 1911. Now he's gone from Santa Barbara to New York City, and he's living at Columbia University at Livingston Hall. Any of you go to Columbia?
Yes.
Okay, do you remember Livingston Hall? No. Okay. Dear mother, at this point he's calling her dear mother, received your kind letter of the 28th, which filled me with love and satisfaction. I am especially glad to see you are progressing in the direction I wanted. So it's only a few months. But you have to understand that because she's his first student and he's brimming over, you know, it's an intensive course. He did, but not in the same way. Okay, he's born in 1882. He came in 1910. What's the math? How old is he? He's not 30, no. 28. Let's see, anybody here, nobody here is as young as he was when he was sent here to plant this world message. So he's young. And the first part of his life, he was trained by his grandfather, Ustad Mola Baksh. Mola Baksh was called the Beethoven of India. Great, great musician. He came from a musical family. He learned his spirituality through music. Then his heart turned to a wish to have a Sufi murshid. Then he kept having visions. Then he met the face of his vision, and he took initiation with Sayyid Abu Hashim Madani. And we don't even have a picture of him. We don't have a photograph. And he spent 5 years under his guidance, and then his murshid Abu Hashim Madani said, I want to send you to the Western world to spread the message of Sufism and unite the East and West through the harmony of your music, something like that. So I'm sure he had music students. He'd been married twice, and both his wives had died. I mean, by 28, he'd had two wives, each of whom had passed away. So no children. He'd mostly studied North Indian classical music, but had some training in Carnatic music as well, and a little bit of training in Western music from one of his uncles, who had gone to Europe and come back with kind of European dress and, you know, some European instruments. So, you know, you have a sense that there was some fascination with the West. So he came in 1910. So probably this is his first, but in any case, his first Western Marine. And I'm sure he's just piling on the practices, you know, do this for 29 hours a day. Oh, we're done with that. Now do this for 29, you know. Okay. So that kind of paints the picture. He says, "Dear Mother, don't you have any aim in life but the self-realization, and one cannot realize oneself until one gives up all the aims of life and sticks to the one." So just take that, he's writing you, and it's pretty much what we've talked about. He's a little more pushy on his point. No, strong on his point. Then he goes on to say, and this is something that would be quite foreign to a Western in ear, and even maybe to us. "All praise of your advancement in this line is due to our masters in the chain who are sending their vibrations of joy, love, and peace." You didn't know you had a whole gang helping you out, did you? A whole chain of masters, they're there to serve you. They're more interested in serving you than even know you know about them. "All praise of your advancement in this line is due to our masters in the chain who are sending their vibrations of joy, love, and peace. Best wishes, yours in the infinite, Anayat Khan." So that was 5th July. It was actually his birthday, 1911. He's born on the 5th of July. He's the 5th, the Dalai Lama's the 6th. Next letter, very next letter from Livingston Hall, 17th July. "Dear Mother," I'm going to skip right to the part I want you to hear. "Then try to watch your breath day and night, continuing the same practice." Now, we don't have the practice he gave, but I can make an assumption and give it to you. "Then try to watch your breath day and night, continuing the same practice. After some days, it will be so much accustomed to the practice that you will not take a single breath unconsciously." It's kind of a white lie. "After some days, it will be so much accustomed to the practice that you will not take a single breath unconsciously, and then you will be praying to God Almighty for day and night, all the movements. Try not to lose even a single breath without the mantram, without the sacred phrase, and see the grand results you'll experience. Hoping all is well with you, my best wishes and love. Yours in the infinite, Anayat Khan." Because that's right in here too. That's Yafata. He gives her Yafata to say 1,000 times every day when she goes on retreat. That's fine. Just do 1,000 yapatas a day. Stick with your confusion. You'll be in good shape. Okay. I just wanted you to hear that. Those two things. Don't you have any aim in life but the spiritual realization, and realize that you have to put all other aims aside and stick to the one. So again, what he's basically saying is go to the root wish. Stick with the root wish. Whatever you do, whatever you wish for, do it, because there's a reason for it, but realize it's for the root. Like we, you know, the root thirst we talked about. Okay? Then, here I think is really the most central practice of our lineage. And in my mind, it should be the practice we dedicate ourselves to the most. Learning to have a relaxed, rhythmic breath, the natural swing of the breath, and place a sacred phrase on that. And that also becomes the core of our meditation practice, you know, which is a special time where you sit down on your butt. And don't get confused that enlightenment has to do with sitting in your butt. It doesn't. It has to do with limitless freedom, you know, presence, divine presence, spiritual realization. That's not location-based at all. Okay, so this is a practice. This is a text, that characterizes the practice very well. It's from the Anayat Khan's lessons called the Githas. So years later, he starts creating a lesson plan. You know, so he'll give talks. His chief marids will take those talks and put the ones on breath in this group, and the ones on symbology in this group, and and so on and so forth. The ones on concentration in this group, and they become the Gathas and the Githas, and then those are mailed out, you know, by subscription to Norway and to, you know, to Germany and to South America and so on and so forth, and to America. So this is from the Githas, and it's the first lesson in this series two Githas on Riyazat. So if you spoke Urdu and you use the word Riyazat, my music guru would say to me, do your Riyaz, do your practice. Riyazat, your practice. Riyazat. It's an Urdu word. Okay? Number one, it's called Fikr, F-I-K-R. So, you know, just to say, before I read the text, Zikr, you know, La ilaha illallah. Fikr is keeping a sacred phrase on the breath. So the most full Fikr is the fricker of La ilaha illallah. That would be breathing out La, El, La, Ha, breathing in an El, Al, La. Ooh, clear? Go ahead. No. Breathing. Excellent. Now you can be confident that this is the practice he was referring to. Now try to watch your breath and with the mantram, because this is the full practice. I think later he may realize that this is the perfect practice for him, coming from a land where those sounds and words are close friends, you know, as they are for some of us. But so later, now we have toward the one on the breath in English and or simplified versions. So we might breathe out Allahu. Breathe in. Allahu. Go ahead. Clear? Yeah. So what we take fikr to mean is really placing any sacred phrase on the breath. Do it with Om Mani Padme Hum. Breathe out. Om Mani Padme Hum. Breathe in. Om Mani Padme Hum. Then, you know, as I'm developing into practice of myself, I realize, oh, I could even do the sung melodies on my breath. You know, so I might be breathing out, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, breathing in, Jai Jai Ram Om. Go ahead, Shri Ram, Jai Ram, breathing, Jai Jai Ram Om, you know, mentally. Beautiful. And because we have this treasury of the dances of universal peace, most of you know more mantras than anybody else in the world. and not only that, we have so... One year in 2007, I took a group to India, you know, because we were the host of the Urs, and we had like 74 people with us. I mean, can you... It's more people than this, but you didn't feel it because it was, you know, just a pen. You were on that trip, yeah. And we could go anywhere. You know, you wouldn't know we're all together, but it's like, what do they call that when you go into a place and you make music? Flash mob. We were like a super flash mob. And it was so much fun. I was kind of like, here we go. And we'd start singing these mantras and zikrs and... Everyone looked like, who's in charge? Where's this coming from? You know, we'd be at a Sufi shrine all of a sudden. Yeah. So, okay, here's the lesson. So, everyone get a sense of fikr? Yeah. The breath is the current which is established between all planes of one's existence. Its current runs from the life unseen to the life on the surface, thus uniting spirit and matter both. When the breath leaves our material being, then comes what one calls death, which shows that breath is the sign of life and life itself, and its contact with the body keeps the body alive, and its contact with the mind keeps the mind alive, but neither body nor mind is life. If there is any sign of life we can trace, it is no other than the breath. Therefore, the Sufi takes the breath as the means of receiving what they need from the life unseen to the life on the surface, and also makes it a means of sending what one wishes from the life external to the life within. The breath may be considered as a lift, an elevator, a lift which you can take to any floor up and any floor down. By the help of the breath, you can send your thought everywhere and anywhere to any plane and to bring about desired results. In breath resides all the mystery there is. The Sufi's object being self-realization by the ideal of God. Now that very potent sentence, you can follow it, because we talked about the God ideal yesterday, the idea of where you aim, the Sufi's object being self-realization by the ideal of God. The Sufi works for its attainment by means of the breath, which we call fikr, and an ideal so attained becomes one's experience, one's kingdom forever. And the second lesson, called Rhythm in Fikr, Rhythm is the nature of motion, and motion is the nature of life, and life is not possible without motion, and motion is not possible without rhythm, and it's rhythmic motion which keeps the whole universe going, and the same motion is the hidden secret of our lives as we are a miniature universe within ourselves. Our breath is both the cause and the effect of this rhythmic motion. Inhaling and exhaling is just like the pendulum of a clock. When it is regular, the clock goes regularly. When the pendulum is slow, the clock goes slow. And when the pendulum is quick, the clock goes fast. And so it is with us. When our breath is rhythmic, all things go well. The mechanism of our body, the working of our mind, and all the work of our feelings, all are normal. Therefore, all we think, speak, and do is normal and right. Now, when the rhythm of our breath is irregular, all illness comes, thoughts wander, feelings are upset, and our life becomes full of confusion. Sounds bad. All we feel, speak, and do has a bad effect. In other words, a wrong effect on ourselves and others. Therefore, by the fikr, the Sufi sets their breath to the proper rhythm, and when it becomes a habit by a practice done every day, the Sufi's whole life becomes orderly and regular, because the rhythm in time becomes a habit of the breath. And while awake or asleep, the breath goes on rhythmically, keeping all pulsations in rhythm, on which the health entirely depends. The rhythm so produced by the breath keeps the thoughts in order, the will powerful, the memory in order, the feelings normal, and thereby all one's affairs in life come to perfect and proper order. Pretty good claims, huh? What do you think? You gonna buy that?
Yeah,
I'm buying. Sure. I'll send it to Barbara. She's already got a whole bunch of emails. Yeah, these are all there. But yeah, I've culled through the teachings and picked little gems. Thank you, Malik. It's amazing to see, and we've done this before together, many of you, that when you're relaxed and you allow the natural swing, like, it's very beautiful to imagine allowing your breath to be a really healthy swing. So just feel that for now. Just breathe in, swing in. It comes to the top. Oh, now it goes down. Swings out. Let it be free. Feel that kind of a long, long rope swing. So it's on it, ride it. That's good. And we actually like the habit of placing a fikr on the breath. So let's use toward the one. Toward the one. So swing it in. Toward the one. Toward the one. Now, this is a daily companion for me. It's a very, very close, reliable friend. Supporter, super treasury. You'd get farther with this than if I gave you all, $100,000 each. Yeah, this is a better gift than $100,000. But if you have $100,000, we'll take it. Yeah. Whatever. It's a great treasure. It's The principle of the is there to keep the breath in rhythm, but it's not a metronome rhythm. You know, I don't think it would be healthy to just go da 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 because I wanted to have. It's there. The rhythm is there. The natural rhythm toward the one. Toward the one. You follow me? Okay. I want you to see very quickly that every disturbing emotion, if we want to call it, you know, making up a term, disturbing emotion, will interrupt the natural rhythm of the breath. So you may not have realized it, but we can analyze how the breath stream is interrupted according to the nature of your disturbing emotion. Different with anger than with jealousy, than with loneliness, than with fear, and so on and so forth. So let's so set your breath in motion, in rhythm, toward the one in, toward the one out. Go ahead. Okay. I want you to feel lonely as an actor, just for the moment. Feel lonely and see what happens to the rhythm of your breath. Okay, long enough. What happened? Shallow. Staticky. Yeah. Well, tip, huh? Uneven. So I think if you studied it long enough, here's what you'd find. You'd find that you would end up breathing out and unable to breathe in. No in-breath. It's like this. If I go like this, it's hard to be lonely on the in-breath. That's out-breath. I want you to also see that, you know, making up the phrase beneficial emotion. I mean, I don't know, you know, to give, you know, that every beneficial emotion will have quite a different effect on the breath. So let's go back to toward the one in, toward the one out. Go ahead. So okay, now connect to your heart and feel generous, you know, generous, compassion, kind, you know, beneficent. Keep watching your breath and see what happens to it. Okay, what happened? Lengthened, expanded, sweetened. Okay, inhalation. Nice. Yeah, okay. So this is going to, you know, since we don't have a lot of time, let's do a few more. How's that? Okay, go back to toward the one. Okay, get pissed off. Feel pissed off. Watch your breath. Okay, what happened? Snorting, okay. Hardly take a breath. What's that? Oh, I see. Oh, I see. Well, hard, okay. Here's the most typical result of anger's effect on your breath. You breathe in and you hold your breath. It's a help. I can prove it to you, okay? Breathe all the way out. Hold your breath. Try to be angry. Okay. Next experiment. Breathe in. Hold your breath. Now be angry. You feel it? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm certain that, you know, I know the Chinese have worked on this a lot, but I'm certain there'll be a time when mysticism of breath does become part of the generality, and then we'll understand the nature of disease and which organs are affected by which emotions. Because clearly a natural breath is like when the garden hose is flowing. When you experience anger, jealousy, loneliness, fear, greed, lust, so on and so forth, it's all different types of stoppages of the breath. So that means vitality is being limited, or nourishment is being limited in a particular kind of way. So loneliness, that'll affect your organ in one way. You know, your kidneys are going, please breathe in, breathe in, come on. Your liver, you know, breathe, come on, come on, I need some vitality. It's tough down here. Yeah. So, and I think it's wise for you to distinguish between acute emotion and chronic emotion. Acute, you know, I remember them asking the Dalai Lama, do you ever get angry? And he said, sure. He says, but I recover quickly. You know, he says, as I've been developing, I can recover much more quickly. So, all right. So for a few minutes, you know, someone walked into his office and said, my family was just murdered by the Chinese. He gets that every day. You have to understand, every day someone comes in from China about being abused. So I'm sure, you know, out of 10 of those, it gets to him, or whatever, one out of whatever. So, but then he recovers. Yeah, so that's acute recovery. Chronic is like, I'm so angry at my father. You know, that comes up again. Your father's not even alive anymore. You can't even work it out with him, or whatever. Yeah. So that's a chronic sense of fear, loneliness, anger, jealousy, and so on and so forth. So what's beautiful about this practice is that it's an antidote without even having to process your wounds. Later, we combine them all together naturally. We don't want to leave a stone unturned. But going to gym every day, making a habit of a rhythmic breath, it will change your life, just like he said. And that's what I'm advocating for. And so in the last, you know, 20 years of my involvement in our family, I've tried to emphasize daily meditation practice. I've assigned all my Marines to do daily meditation practice. I know not all of them do, but some do, so that's good. I'm very happy about that. Everybody according to their where they are. But so I'm advocating for that now, very strongly, for your benefit and for my benefit, because if you get better, my world's a better place. We're interdependent. There's no doubt about it. So what I want to suggest is how I approach meditation. So I make a time every day. I think there's a wisdom of making the same time every day, because just like keeping your breath in rhythm, when you keep your life in rhythm, things go better. And that's why sometimes retirement is even difficult for people, because they lose the rhythm of work. And unless they can find a rhythm in their life, it's more difficult. I've told this story, but a Marine of mine, very, very difficult emotional problems in the winter. What's it called? Winter. Seasonal affect disorder. Depressive disorder. That person often tried to kill herself, I don't want to say him or her, and came to me for advice a long time ago. It's 30 years ago. The advice I gave, get a job. They had no rhythm in their life. You know, now the person got a job, get up in the morning, we go to work, you know, had rhythm. And I know my Tibetan teacher says that when he gives a talk. He said, I feel 95% of the world's problems could be solved by people having a good night's sleep at the same time and three meals a day. You know, a rhythm, what he's saying. Rhythm in life starts with, or you know, the basis of rhythm in life is rhythm of the breath. In other words, you're going right to the core. And as we said in the dance Ruach, the word breath and the word soul is the same word in all the sacred languages. So by connecting with this, what we call breath in the physical world, we're riding into the inner world. And that same symbology is used in so many of the scriptures. You know, Prophet Muhammad riding the Barak into the inner world. The Barak is the symbol of the breath. So, I like to sit in the morning. You know, you have to know your schedule. I like to sit on the ground. For some of you younger, that's very fine. And for some of you older, it's not an option anymore. But either way, you can sit, you can find a comfortable chair. You know, if I was going to find a chair, I think I'd get more cushions under me than I have here. I'd be a little higher up. I'd want to sit with my back straight. My preferred position of my hands is just sitting on my knees. But, you know, there's all sorts of mudras, and there's this position as well. They all have their purpose. Now I want to set my breath in motion. And so I especially love the imagery of a swing, a long, long rope swing, where it just has a lot of freedom. So I'm trying to set my breath into a relaxed, a refined rhythm. And when Murshid would teach us from the Gospels, from the Beatitudes particularly, he translated the Beatitude, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who have a refined breath. You know, when he's looking at the Aramaic, the original words, and he's going, no, this isn't translated right. It doesn't say poor, it says refined. And it doesn't say spirit, it says breath, you know, refined breath. Words can have many meanings, so I'm sure the other meaning is perfectly correct. Another meaning. Okay. So I want to set my breath in a swing and realize that any tension I have from physical, emotional, and mental will all interrupt the breath or turn that around, that if I can set my breath in motion, I can gradually relax what's being tight. So, and for that, I follow Murshid's advice by going to the I start in the belly center. When he writes about the Hara center, belly center, he says, this is the perfect way to rid the mind of useless luggage. Very charming. Rid the mind of useless luggage. Well, I'm ready for that. How about you? Ian? Wow. Yeah, beautiful. That's amazing. You still? It's fantastic. He's an avid bicycle rider. And he can ride 50 miles, and what sustains him is just sticking to a rhythm. Just, you know, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to swing my breath in and out. I use toward the one, just like we've been doing. And I concentrate on my belly. And so this first part of meditation, the Tibetans call the first part of a meditation shamatha, which translates as calm abiding. So it's an invitation to calm down. So that means physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, all of it. But the most immediate is to go through the body, because whatever is going on deep, it's in your body. So you find the tension from the belly center, from the breath. With the breath, you breathe through it and relax it, and patiently. What do I do with my mind? I request my mind to focus on my breath. And when I find that my mind has gotten on a crosstown bus and it goes over to the next village, and then I go, wow, what am I doing in that village? I don't analyze why I got to that village, how I got to that village. I just go back to the breath, toward the one in, toward the one out. So I keep returning to the practice. I don't try to figure out or take advantage of what's happening cross town. I just want to be here and present. So that's the first part. So let's just do that for a minute. I invite you to sit up straight, toward the one in, toward the one out, natural swing, and feel like you've placed your nostrils on your belly. Keep coming back to the practice. You get distracted. When you recognize you've been distracted, just come back to the belly, back to the in-breath, back to the out-breath, breathing in toward the one, breathing out toward the one. Okay, very good. Excellent. Questions?
Question.
Why not? Why not? After you take a shower, how do you feel? Why? Why do you feel refreshed? Because you are refreshed. It's refreshing. Meditation is super refreshing. It's like a shower. It's a breath shower of your body, mind, and heart. Or you know, any other metaphor. Yeah, dip in the stream. Yeah. Yeah. The deeper you get, the more dazzlingly beautiful this world is. You know, and at first, your eyes are open to light and real beauty, but finally you see the essence of everything in what formerly was shadow as well. You know, so view just gets better. It's more worse, whatever. Not to worry. Yeah, okay, good. So anything else? Okay. So second part, now this is my style of meditation. Second part of meditation, once I feel settled, calm abiding, then comes the period of going in a deeper way. And in Buddhist terminology, it's called vipassana, or insight, seeing in. So from shamatha, you know, calm abiding, to insight. I feel that's best supported by now breathing through the heart center instead of the belly center. Settle, calm down, empty the mind, heart, going up to the heart center. So now I take my nostrils off and place it here on my chest. And I want to say that, especially as a new meditator, it would be perfectly expected and common that as you begin to settle, you're going to nod off. Part of it is just, you know, you've got to catch up. You know, sleep. You've been sleep deprived. But also part of it is when you're used to, when you calm down, the breath falling to sleep. You know, I used to fall asleep all the time. I'd be with the Rinpoches when they'd come, and they'd be giving a meditation. I couldn't help myself. Now, you know, one out of 100 meditations, I'll have that nodding thing. One out of 300, you know, very, very seldom. Just from practice, yeah. Okay, so this is Bikram meditation. What can I say? Huh? We're going to place our nostrils here. And I like to change phrases, though that's not essential at all. You could continue with toward the one. I like to change phrases to Al-La-Hu, because I feel it's easy. So sometimes I'll meditate with the full fikr, you know, the full fikr that I showed you. But that's a lot of da 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 da, you know, la el la ha. L, if it's part of your fabric and easy, yes, fantastic. And naturally, if you're going to meditate every day, you can play around, try it, see what, you know, see what's serving you. But Allahu is pretty straightforward and simple. So just for a moment, practice it with me. Breathe in, Allahu. Breathe out, Allah. Ooh. Breathe in, al la, ooh. Breathe out, al la. Ooh. Clear? Okay, so with the attention in the heart, this everything, the same principles, get on the crosstown bus, just come back, don't worry. Then, if I were to try to describe what attitude to take in meditation, you know, naturally we have a root motivation to meditate, to awaken, so we have a wish, but we have to be careful because there's so much of a tendency when you make a wish to base your happiness on the outcome of your wish. And that's a failed strategy. And so, especially in meditation, we want to profoundly practice clarity, insight, without an agenda. In other words, do the practice and whatever arises, you're present. And when you can develop that skill, then nothing in the world is going to disturb you because you've been practicing. Okay. All right. Okay. Mercer, when he would teach us about it, he'd say this, don't react. You know, he'd say it louder. Don't react. So, and there's a saying of Mayor Baba, do not seek and ye shall find. So that would apply, huh? That would apply here. Yeah. Okay. So let's just spend a few minutes here in the heart center, breathing in Al. So imagine now we've been meditating for 10 minutes on Toward the One. We let our breath rise up to our heart in this period of insight, breathing in Al, La, Hu, breathing out Al, La. Excellent. Okay. Very good. So that's an encapsulated view of my own approach to meditation. If you're starting out, 20 minutes is fine. 10 minutes, you know, I don't divide the time belly and heart. I just start in the belly. When I feel settled, you know, I don't go like, let's see, not yet, not okay now. You know, I settle in the belly. When I feel settled, I rise up to the heart. And then I remain there. And then either I ring the bell or Tamam rings the bell. A half an hour. I don't think you need to sit long, long periods. No, maybe there's a period where you want to do intensive practice, but generally 20 minutes, half hour, 40 minutes, that's fine. Wonderful. 20 minutes, you know. And if you haven't meditated before and it's, you know, kind of scary or however, you know what I mean, it's hard to approach, make a commitment for the next 11 days. Or say, okay, for the next 33 days, you know, or something like that, or for the next moon signs, you know, what do you call it? New moon cycle. Okay, and then reevaluate, you know, because then it's more approachable than I have to take this on my whole life. But one is a specific practice at the gym, and the other is a 24/7 practice. This supports the making a habit of a rhythmic breath everywhere and anywhere. And then wherever you go, you're praying. You're even praying in the Safeway or at Whole Foods or, you know, where at Costco, you're the pushing the cart toward the one, you're blessing the, you know, on this side, you're blessing the cereal boxes, and the nuts are getting blessed by your presence. The people walking by who are all kafluffed or whatever, you're blessing them. Some of them, yeah. Sometimes, you know. Sometimes you smile at someone, they're going like, don't get in my face, you know. But whatever. I'll go.
It's just Tucson.
In Tucson, yeah. Yeah. So to me, this is the, don't read another book. Don't read a word of an icon. Don't listen to me. Don't listen to anything. Do this practice. You've got everything you need. It's a full, complete package. It's so terrific. And it's such a secret. I don't know why. I'm certain that history, in the coming history, we'll get it into the education system. It's a foolish travesty that everyone doesn't start learning this from the age 3 on, through games and play, and by 5th grade, you're sitting quietly in class before you start. And by 7th grade, and by 9th grade, you're like a monster meditator, you know. You know, and I'm waiting, you know, Mershita Vera was a great light in our family. She was one of Murshid Sam's disciples from the 1940s. And so we didn't know her well, but then after Murshid Sam died, she kind of joined up with the community. And started children's school. She was an educator, and we had the seed centers. Any of you were involved in the seed centers? No. Huh?
Yeah.
There is one in now. Huh? Oh, I see. It's probably, I don't know if it has a connection to the, it could. So, you know, both my kids went to the seed center. She was out there because they'd get dressed up as the prophets, and they do prophet walks, and I mean, that might be beyond what we could do in the public school system. In the profit system, yeah. Yeah, Waldorf, talking about Waldorf school, one of my son's friends came to Sufi camp, and he says, this is fantastic. This is like Waldorf for adults. Scary but true. No, it's good. Yeah. So I'm just really trying to emphasize this in your mind to take this on. You know, I know many of you do, and I know many of you have experienced also learning how to keep your breath and rhythm through the walk, all part of extension of Anayat's guidance to Rabia. Now try to watch your breath day and night, following all the movements, and see the grand results. After some time, by making a habit of the breath, it will be, how does he say, you know, it'll happen with ease. You know, after some time, you know, yeah. Yeah, something like that. It was, yeah. I think that we cooked it. Yeah. So I want to close with some dances.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So, okay. Special thanks to Baraka. To Joaquin, who picked me up at the airport in Albuquerque.
You know what? Let's do all the
let me keep talking. To Taki, to look at all this, to and we've recorded all my talks, and he's going to, you know, we'll clean them up, and then we'll put them up on the Prescott site, you know, so if you want to review what I said, you can. And to the band, to all the musicians, to all of the helpers who made this hall nice, and the registrars, and the, you know, the teamwork. And the other thing is, I say it again. Thanks to Bonita, my host. Absolutely. And, you know, the other thing is we couldn't have done it without you. So thank you, for the whole circle working together. So now, who did I leave out? The board? The Prescott board? Who's that? Raise your hand if you're on, or stand up if you're on the Prescott board. Wow. It's an all girls board with Joaquin. Yeah. I've been coming to Prescott for a long time, at least more than that. More, I think before I was the peer, I was coming.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So more, I think more like 20 or 25 years. Maybe even 30, before Rebecca went to school here, and it was when Bill and Janine were together, and at least 20, as it something, whatever. So I'm very happy to be here again, and look forward to another time. And I'm happy that you get to see a variety of teachers, because each of us tell the same story with a different language and emphasize different things, and then you get a wide swath, of teaching. Good? Okay, meet you in the middle.